This is the Christian Miscarriage Co. podcast, where we take a raw look at the grief surrounding miscarriage, how it affects the faith of Christian women, and how the church can better support mothers of miscarriage. Tune in weekly as we build our faith, hear stories of God's faithfulness, and learn how to help grieving mothers in the process. Hey, hey, hey. I am so over the moon for this episode one of the Christian Miscarriage Co. podcast. If you don't know anything about us, I'm Kate. I am the runner, founder. I'm the human behind the Christian Miscarriage Co. And I'm excited. So today, our first episode, I thought that it would be super fitting to just really kind of talk about what's the big deal surrounding miscarriage. Which, if you have experienced pregnancy loss, probably sounds like the dumbest question you've ever heard. But I think that it's a big deal to address, because when it comes to the silence that surrounds miscarriage and pregnancy loss in our culture, but largely in the church, I've come to the conclusion after 15 miscarriages, 16 babies, that the silence in the church is not due to the church's apathy, but more due to the lack of understanding that people who have not experienced miscarriage have. So we're going to dig into that today and do a lot of just kind of, well, we can call it housekeeping. I would call it explanation. And I'm going to offer here a trigger warning, which may come often throughout this, but especially for this, because I will probably get a little bit graphic here in this first episode. And the reasoning behind that is, when it comes to miscarriage, and especially when it comes to natural loss, meaning you go through the process naturally, be it at home or wherever you are, not having like a DNC or something. It's a very graphic process, and there's a lot of bleeding and stuff that happens after a DNC, but I want to offer this trigger warning because I want to do some describing here in order to really kind of drive home the importance and, well, why it's such a big deal and why it needs to be addressed openly, and why people need to understand why this kind of thing needs so much support, especially from the church. So if you don't know my story, I had my first child at 19. I got married 6 weeks after I turned 18, and within a few months we were pregnant. And so we had a really easy pregnancy. We had a really easy labor, and it was very easy. We had a baby. And when Adeline was 4 months old, we found out that we were pregnant again, which was terrifying because I was still 4 months postpartum. And at 11 weeks, we miscarried. We had a DNC, so I did not naturally go through the process. I know exactly when my second child was born. I just don't know, you know. I don't know. Good times. Approximately 2.5 years later, we had another baby. And it was, again, a very easy thing. We wanted to get pregnant. And so we tried, and boom, we got pregnant, had a baby. And so it really felt like just a fluke, just a one-off kind of crazy thing. We had never known anybody who had had a miscarriage, so we had not, it just was never on our radar. When we decided we wanted a third child, our second daughter, Abigail, was 2. And it took us 3 more years to have a baby. And in that 3 years, we had 7 more miscarriages. So that was a total of 8 losses before we had our third child. And then after he was born, oh, now we're doing math. After he was born, we have now had 6 more. So we had, no, this is math. Ask me a history question. We had 6 more miscarriages. We had another baby in between then. So we've had a total of 15 losses. One of those was a set of twins, so 16 babies total. And our most recent miscarriage was 3 weeks ago. So this is all still very raw and very, it's still very here, very present for me. So that is the story that I have. And through all of those losses, I have had a myriad of experiences in the actual losses, but also in how the church has, as a whole, has cared for and addressed it. And so one of the most common things that happens in the church when someone has a miscarriage is this. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll pray for you. And I want to say that that is helpful. But the truth is that to tell someone I'll pray for you and to walk away, well, let's look at it this way. Let's have a picture story here. You're on the beach for sunrise. You're staring out over the water. The sun is coming up. The water is so peaceful. And it's beautiful, and you're just having this moment where you're sitting there looking at the beauty that God has created. And you see, just kind of in your peripheral vision, a woman in the water, and she looks like she's okay, except she kind of doesn't. She's not yelling, she's kind of quiet, but she's bobbing up and down. You see her face going under, and she comes back up, and she goes back under, and she comes back up. And all of a sudden you realize she's drowning. And so the peace is broken. You don't know this woman. She's just over there. She kind of looks like she's drowning, but she kind of looks like she's okay. You're not really sure. So I want to ask this question. If you look at this woman and you say, I'll pray for you, and then you walk away, is that going to save her life? Is it good enough? And I would answer that with a resounding no. You have to put some footwork in. You need to go to her and you need to reach out a hand and you need to pull her up and out of it. I will add this caveat. Prayer is the most effective thing that you can possibly do. But faith without works is dead. And so this is one of the things that happens so often in the church, just, again, not out of anything, not out of disregard, not out of not wanting to help, but largely because the church doesn't, and people in general, I address the church because that's what I do, is I address the church. But as a whole, our society looks at the drowning mother who has lost her baby and says, I'll pray for you, and walks away. And let me explain why I think that that is. I think a major reason for that is, one, because they don't understand miscarriage. And we're going to dive into that in a minute. But I think that a major reason is discomfort. So grief causes other people to be uncomfortable. And when people are uncomfortable, they don't know what to say. And they're afraid of saying the wrong thing. And so they choose either not to say anything or they say the first thing that comes to their mind, which is usually to blame God, right? Like, oh, well, God's will be done, or, you know, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, which, by the way, is completely out of context. Or they say, you know, well, I guess the Lord needed another angel, which is also not how this works. And so what we end up with is well-meaning church people either being completely quiet and completely absent out of fear of adding more pain, or feeling like they need to say something but not knowing what to say and blaming God when this woman is already questioning her faith, when her faith is already shaken. And so, first off, that's one of those things that this podcast and the Christian Miscarriage Co. as a whole is really focused on addressing. But let's talk about the lack of understanding. Let's talk about, why is miscarriage such a big deal? And let's start with this. Miscarriage is the loss of a child. And I don't think that that can be stressed enough. When a woman loses the baby in her womb, she has still lost a child. No matter how early that loss occurs, whether the loss occurs a week after she found out that she was pregnant or months after she found out she was pregnant and she's been growing this baby for months, no matter how long or how short the period of time is that she is pregnant, I guarantee you she's already planned this baby's life out, the whole life. In 1 week, if she found out she was pregnant at, you know, 5 weeks, and then a week later she miscarries at 6 weeks, I guarantee you that she's already started thinking about names. She's already started thinking about how she's going to decorate the nursery. She's already started looking at maternity clothes. She's already started adjusting her view of her future and the view of her family and the view of what her world is going to look like in the future. And at 24 hours in a day for an entire week, that's a lot of hours that her thoughts are consumed with what the life is going to look like. And then all of a sudden that gets taken away. It's gone. And so in the church, we have to remember, and not just the church, again, culture as a whole, but I address the church specifically. If we, and this is a statement that might anger some people, and I'm okay with that. But I'm going to say this. If we believe that life begins at conception, we cannot continue to minimize the life that she carried, no matter how short that is. If we as the church believe that life begins at conception, then we have to treat the life as if it exists at 5 weeks, at 6 weeks, however long that takes. And what that looks like once that life is gone is addressing the mother as a mother. Whether she has living children, whether she doesn't, she is still a mother who has lost her child. She's lost the future that she's already started planning out. She's lost first birthdays. She's lost births. She's lost first steps. She's lost weddings. She's lost all of these things that would have occurred in the child's life. And I guarantee you, whether she held that life for a week or an entire pregnancy, she planned it out. And so did the Lord. So as the church, we need to realize that the child that she lost is truly a child. And that will go a long way toward allowing us as the church to address her in her grief as a grieving mother. Because that's what she is. She is a grieving mother. Whether the child is with her in her arms or whether the child is in heaven, she is still a mother. So another thing that I really think that the church needs to understand, and this is kind of where the trigger warning comes in, is going to be when she has that miscarriage, she goes through a labor process, even if the labor process is not exactly the same as a full-term labor. So here's where I'm going to speak a little bit from experience, because I've done this a ridiculous amount of times. And I've also had four, you know, healthy live births. So here we go. If you feel like you, if you don't feel like you can listen to a description of a miscarriage, this is a good time to click away. My most recent miscarriage was 3 weeks ago. I miscarried at almost 9 weeks after a very long process that we will not go into, where doctors thought one thing and it ended up being another. Ultimately, I ended up miscarrying. One thing that many people do not realize during a miscarriage is that the labor process is very much similar to a full-term labor. When your body is releasing the contents of the uterus and the baby and the amniotic sac, all of the things that were in there that were building for pregnancy and building a pregnancy, those things have to come out. During a natural labor, a normal labor, the uterus contracts and pushes the baby and the contents out. And it's exactly the same during a miscarriage. So during a miscarriage, whether she's 6 weeks or, well, miscarriage technically only goes to 20 weeks. So after that, it's considered a stillbirth. So there's some facts if y'all did not know that. But whether she's 6 weeks or, you know, much further along, the uterus still contracts and still pushes out the contents of the uterus. So she is still having labor contractions that then push things out. And so it is a very graphic process where the pain of contractions, it occurs, it happens. She has labor contractions. And so if we think about someone, like for me, going through this process 3 weeks ago, I have five kids at home, one of whom is not even 2 years old. And then I have a four-year-old boy who is an entire circus in and of himself. So trying to parent, whether, and not everybody has five kids, but trying to parent one kid or just trying to survive when you don't have children and you're still going through this labor process is really, really difficult. And so something that I think the church should understand is that during this process, she needs help. Everybody celebrates and gets really excited, and everybody wants to pitch in and bring meals and, you know, keep the kids and do all of these things when the result of the labor is a squishy baby. But what happens when the result of the labor is exhaustion and heartache and depression, and there's no prize, there's no baby at the end of it? What happens then? Do we leave her to her own devices? Because while she is going through this process of labor, there's no baby to respond to her body. In the natural labor process, and I'm explaining, I was a birth doula and a miscarriage doula for 4 years. So that's kind of how I can help understand with these things. During the natural labor process, there are hormones between the mother and baby that talk back and forth. The positioning of the baby turns and changes and triggers certain hormones in the mother to help the mother's body know how to push the baby out, and vice versa. So when the mother is miscarrying, or when she is, you know, birthing a baby who is not alive anymore, her body is doing all of the work, but the baby's not responding. The baby's not providing the things that keep labor on track. So she may bleed for a few days and then have like a day's worth of really, really strong labor contractions where she's putting out massive clots, sometimes golf and softball size clots of, you know, the baby and the amniotic sac and then the lining of the uterus. And then the bleeding may stop for a day or two, and then the contractions may come again, and the bleeding may start and the clots may start again. And I know that this is a graphic description. And I think that it's really important, though, that people understand that this process, it doesn't happen over the course of a day. It is not, as some OBGYNs like to tell us, just a heavy period. It's not at all like that, unless you miscarry extremely early. But by the time you hit about 6 weeks, there's a lot in there that has to come out. And the only way for it to come out is by labor contractions, removing it from the uterus and pushing it out. And the point that I'm making with this is, when a mother is miscarrying and she is experiencing labor contractions and bleeding and pushing out everything that was in there, she needs help with the kids. She needs help with the house. She needs help with dinner. She needs someone to help her when she doesn't get to stay home, when she is expected to be at work, because there is no miscarriage leave. She needs help. And as the church, instead of saying, "I'll pray for you," we really need to step in and say, "Okay, we've got meals covered this week. And Susie Joe is going to come and pick up the kids at 3 o'clock and take them to the park." Or, "Oh, you don't want us to take the kids? Fine. You know, we'll come sit with the kids and let them play in the backyard so that you can rest. We're going to come do some laundry. We're going to come do the things so that your body can rest." Because after this process, she's still gone through labor. And that's where the work begins. Because after that, she's not snuggling a sweet baby. She's trying to deal and pick up the pieces of the fact that she doesn't have that. And she's having to fight the hormones that are trying to go back to normal. But they're really having a hard time. And this is why miscarriage is such a big deal. Because it's so misunderstood. Because it's so easy to say, "Oh, that's okay. You'll have another baby." It's so easy to say that. But having another baby doesn't replace this baby. And the promise of another baby doesn't help with the fact that she's bleeding and she's hurting and she's going through a labor process and she still has to wipe herself and get up and go cook dinner. She still has to tie shoes and go to T-ball. The baby's still crying because somebody took his stick. And as the church, we need to understand the nuances of miscarriage. And we need to be able to say, one, "I don't understand what you're going through, but I know the process enough to know that you need help, and here I am." And two, we need to believe that life begins at conception, and therefore recognize the life that meant so much to her. Because the fastest way to invalidate her and make her feel like absolute garbage, worse than she already does, is to treat the baby like the baby never existed, or to treat her like the baby's life didn't matter. Because if we invalidate the life of the baby, then we invalidate the mother. If we invalidate the mother, if she's not a baby because, or if she's not a mother because it wasn't a baby, then what is the point of her grief? We invalidate her grief. I'm going to say that again. If we invalidate the life of the baby she carried, then we invalidate her status as a mother. If there was no baby and she is no mother, then we invalidate her grief. And if we invalidate her grief, then We tell her that it doesn't matter. We tell her that she should just, you know, pick yourself up by the bootstraps and keep going. We cannot do that. We can't do it as a culture anymore, and we certainly can't do it as the church. We have to be able to say, "I don't understand, but I'm going to sit here with you in it. I'll pray for you, but I'm going to get in the dirty with you." Being in ministry, not talking to church leaders, talking to Christians in general, being in ministry, in ministering to people, in serving other people, right? In laying down our lives for our brothers and our sisters. In doing that, it requires that we get dirty. And that's why miscarriage matters so much, because it's dirty. It's ugly. But it gives us an opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to go and move past my discomfort. I'm going to move past the fact that I don't know what to say. And I'm going to come sit with you in silence, just so that you have somebody with you. It's dirty, and it requires that we do the dirty work. Miscarriage matters because it happens to 1 in 4 pregnancies, not 1 in 4 women, 1 in 4 clinically confirmed pregnancies, and countless others that are not clinically confirmed. Miscarriage matters because the baby's life mattered. The soul mattered. The soul existed, no matter how briefly. So many women choose not to announce their pregnancies until after 8 or even 12 weeks because our society has made it so taboo to miscarry. And let me speak a little bit about that. It's so hard as a mom, as a woman, when you have called and you've been so excited and you called and you told everybody and you put that cute little Insta perfect announcement on social media. And then every person you told, you have to go back and tell, hey, just kidding. Just kidding. We lost the baby. And that is the hardest thing in the world to do. To repeat your grief over and over again. You almost have to say it in a very stoic-like manner, because if you break down in front of every single person that you have to tell, it's just exhausting. We ended up, after X amount of miscarriages, we ended up just having an assigned person. This is the person we tell, and their job is to tell everybody else. Because it was so exhausting to me to call everybody and say, hey, we're not having a baby anymore. It's over. And yet, we chose differently. We chose, and we continue to choose, to tell people that we're pregnant when we find out that we're pregnant. And it would be so much easier to not. It would be so much easier for us to wait and not say anything, so that we don't ever have to go back and say, nope, we're not anymore. But let me tell you why we choose differently. We choose differently because for us personally, we believe that it is so important to celebrate the life of the baby for however long we get to hold it. And that's a really hard place to be. It's a really hard thing to do, especially when dealing with our kids. But our kids have even learned the value of the life, even how early it is. No matter how early it is, our kids have learned the value of that little life. And that matters to me. But also, as kind of a training ground, because we want people to know how to deal with us. We want people to know how to deal with women who have experienced and are experiencing miscarriage. Because the life matters. We cannot invalidate that life without invalidating the mother. And so, I'm going to leave you with this. Why is miscarriage such a big deal? Miscarriage is such a big deal because the life was still created by a holy God. Because the motherhood was still created by a holy God. And because it gives us such an incredible opportunity to get down in the mud and the muck and to serve women, whether they are women in our church, women in our neighborhoods, women in our community, whether they are Christians or Jews or Muslims or whatever they may be, this gives us an opportunity to say, I'm going to be here with you and I'm going to show you the love of God. And you're not going to go through this by yourself. I'm so grateful for the people who said that and for the people who've been there for me, for the women who showed up with spaghetti and cookies and Chick-fil-A, for the women who said, you can tell God how you feel. He can take it. And for the women who sat and cried with me and held my hand every single time because they recognized that the life mattered. That is why miscarriage is so important. I love you guys. I hope you guys join me next week again to talk about some more. It's going to get real good around here. I hope y'all have a great week.